All right, so sometimes you hear about these really old legal cases and you think, well, that was then, this is now. How could something from like 1855 still matter?
Yeah, and that's a fair point. It feels like forever ago.
It does. But what if I told you there's a case, United States v. Winans, that still has a huge impact on what landowners can do with their property even today, like even down to fishing rights?
Really, like, what could a treaty from way back then have to do with things now?
It all boils down to how treaties with Native American tribes are treated under U.S. law. They're not just any old agreement. They are, and this is important, considered the supreme law of the land. That means they trump a lot of other laws and rights.
Whoa. Okay, so I'm guessing this Winans case is all about one of those
Wait,
treaties.
exactly. We're going to be looking at the Yakama Nation and how they've fought and continue to fight to protect fishing rights that they specifically negotiated for in a treaty back in 1855.
So basically, this deep dive is going to show us how something from so long ago is still shaping legal battles in the present.
That's exactly it. And for anyone listening who's interested in federal Indian law or just how the heck history keeps influencing the legal system today, well, understanding Winans is crucial. It's like a cornerstone case. Its principles are still debated and used in courtrooms across the country.
So this isn't just for history buffs, right? This is for anyone who wants to understand how the law works in the real world, especially with tribal sovereignty and natural resource rights.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to the details of the case. Back in 1855, when this treaty was signed, the Yakama Nation was adamant about securing their right to fish.
Makes sense. It's a huge part of their culture and way of life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they specifically included in the treaty the right to fish at all usual and accustomed places on the Columbia River. And get this, that right was to be shared, or in common, with the citizens of the Washington Territory.
So it wasn't just a right for them alone. They were acknowledging that others would be fishing there too.
Right. They weren't trying to exclude others, just ensure their own access continued. But then, fast forward a bit, we get to the Winans brothers.
Okay, who were they?
They were non-native landowners in Washington State, and they had property along the Columbia River. Now, they started using these things called fish wheels.
Fish wheels. What are those?
Think of them like giant water wheels with nets attached. They were super efficient at catching fish, maybe too efficient, actually.
Too efficient. What does that mean?
Well, the Winans fish wheels were so good at their job that they began causing a pretty serious decline in the fish population in that area. But here's the even bigger problem. These fish wheels were actually blocking the Yakimas from getting to their traditional fishing spots.
So it wasn't just about overfishing, it was literally obstructing their access. That's a big deal.
Exactly. And you can kind of see where the Winans brothers were coming from, at least from their perspective. They owned the land, they had state licenses, even federal patents. They probably thought, this is our property. We have the right to use it how we want and to keep others off.
So they saw it as a straightforward property rights issue.
Basically. But the U.S. government, upholding its responsibilities to the Yakama Nation, disagreed. They saw it as a clear violation of the treaty.
So what did the government do?
They sued the Timmins brothers to try to stop them from interfering with the Yakama's treaty-protected fishing rights. It was a direct conflict between those property rights and a treaty, which is, as we said, the supreme law of the land.
So this case goes to court, right? What happened?
Well, the lower court, surprisingly, sided with the Winans brothers. They ruled that essentially the Yakimas didn't have any special fishing rights beyond what any other citizen of Washington State had.
So they kind of ignored the treaty?
Kind of, yeah. They didn't give it enough weight compared to state law and property rights. But of course, that wasn't the end of the story. The case got appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court.
The big leagues.
Yeah, the big leagues. And that's where things got really interesting.
Okay, so what was the main legal question that the Supreme Court had to decide?
It all boiled down to this. Did the Yakama Nation's right to fish, as guaranteed by the treaty, outweigh the Winans brothers' private property rights? Remember, they had those state licenses and federal patents on their side.
So it was a clash between two powerful legal concepts, treaty rights and private property.
That's it in a nutshell. And the Supreme Court's ruling, they did not mince words. They sided with the Yakama Nation.
Okay, that's a big win for the Yakima. But what exactly did the Supreme Court say?
They said that the Yakima's treaty rights were absolutely valid and had to be protected, but they went even further. They declared that these rights created something called a servitude on the land.
Servitude. What does that mean in this context? It sounds kind of ominous.
In simple terms, it meant that the landowners and any future owners of that land were obligated to allow the Yakimas access for fishing, even if it meant letting them onto their private property. And the court was clear that those state licenses and federal patents couldn't just erase these treaty rights.
So even though the Winans brothers owned the land, they couldn't just do whatever they wanted because of this servitude based on the treaty.
Exactly. The treaty put a limit on their property rights. And the court relied on something called the Reserved Rights Doctrine to reach its decision. It's a pretty important concept in federal Indian law.
Okay, I'm all ears. Break down this Reserved Rights Doctrine for me.
Well, the Supreme Court emphasized that the treaty wasn't about the U.S. granting new rights to the Yakimas. It was about them retaining or reserving rights that they already had.
Makes sense. They were already there, already fishing in those spots. It wasn't a new right granted by the government.
Right. And that's the heart of it. The Reserved Rights Doctrine says that tribes keep all the rights they didn't specifically give up in a treaty.
So it's about what they didn't surrender, not what they were given. That's a subtle but important distinction.
Absolutely. And on top of that, the court also stressed that these treaties have to be interpreted in a way that's fair to the tribes, considering their understanding at the time of signing.
Okay, that makes sense. These weren't always negotiations between equals.
Exactly. The power dynamics were often very uneven. So the court basically said, we have to interpret these treaties with justice and reason in mind, especially when dealing with a group that might not have had the same legal sophistication as the U.S. government.
It's about looking at the intent and understanding of both sides, not just imposing a modern legal framework on historical agreement.
Absolutely. So back to that concept of a servitude. It essentially meant that the Yakima's right to fish was like a burden on the land itself. It wasn't just a personal agreement with the Winans brothers.
It's like a condition attached to the land, no matter who owns it.
Right. And this was key, because it meant the right wasn't tied to any one individual, but continued to exist even if the land changed hands. It's a pretty unique legal concept.
It sounds like a powerful way to protect those treaty rights over time.
That's the idea. Now, I know you're thinking, hold on. How could a treaty override things like state laws and private property rights? Isn't that a bit much?
Yeah, it does seem like it could be a point of tension.
And you'd be right to think that. It's a really important question. But there's a big legal concept that comes into play here. The Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution.
Remind me what that is again.
Essentially, the Supremacy Clause says that the Constitution, federal laws, and treaties made under the Constitution are the top dogs in the legal system.
So they beat out state laws if there's a conflict.
Exactly. So in the Winans case, the treaty, being federal law, trumped Washington state's laws about fishing licenses and even those private property rights that were tied to those licenses. It even overrode federal patents on the land.
That really shows how powerful treaties are under U.S. law. They're not just side agreements. They're a core part of the legal framework.
That's the key takeaway. So, you know, this whole Winans decision is a pretty big deal.
It sounds like a landmark case.
It really is. It firmly established the Reserved Rights Doctrine that we talked about. And it made it crystal clear that states can't just ignore or undermine treaty rights. It also served as a strong defense of tribal sovereignty.
Okay, but how does this all connect to things today?
It's incredibly relevant. Winans set a precedent for tons of later cases involving tribal resource rights. Cases like the Bolt decision, which focused on fishing rights in Puget Sound, relied heavily on the principles established in Winans. Even now, you see it cited in cases dealing with things like salmon conservation, water rights, and even those big pipeline projects that sometimes run through Native American lands.
So it's safe to say Winans is not just some dusty old case. It's still shaping how the law is applied today.
100%. Oh, and one more thing.
Yeah.
You might be wondering if the Supreme Court was totally unanimous in their decision. And the answer is almost.
Almost. So someone disagreed.
Justice White actually dissented, but he didn't write a separate opinion explaining why.
That's interesting. Any ideas on what his issues might have been?
It's hard to say for sure, but we can speculate. Maybe he was worried about upsetting the balance of power between states and the federal government. Or maybe he had a stricter view of property rights and felt those should have been given more weight.
That makes sense. It's a tough issue, balancing those different interests. But ultimately, the majority of the court felt that treaty rights needed to be upheld.
Absolutely. All right, so before we wrap up, let's do a quick recap for all those law students out there.
Always a good idea.
What are the key takeaways they should remember from United States v. Winans?
Number one, Treaties with Native American tribes are super important. They're not just historical documents, they are living agreements that are still actively interpreted and applied today.
Living agreements, I like that. What else?
Number two, federal law, especially treaties, takes precedence over state laws and even private property rights if there's a conflict.
The supremacy clause at work, right?
You got it. Number three, while private property rights are definitely important and they're not absolute, they have to be balanced against other rights, including treaty rights.
So property ownership isn't a blank check to do whatever you want.
Exactly. And finally, number four, these treaty rights can actually be enforced against third parties, like landowners, even if the tribe doesn't own the land itself.
The whole idea of a servitude, right? It's a pretty unique and powerful legal tool to ensure those treaty rights are actually protected.
Exactly.
Okay, so to wrap it all up, United States v. Winans is about so much more than just fishing rights. It's a case that shaped how we understand treaties, tribal sovereignty, and the limits of private property in the face of those agreements.
It's a powerful reminder that the past isn't really past. It still affects our present and future.
100%. And that brings us to our final thought for you all to ponder. You know, we still face all sorts of challenges today when it comes to balancing tribal sovereignty, resource management, and economic development. So how can we take those legal principles that were laid out in Winans and apply them to today's complex situations?
It's a tough question.
It really is. But it's one worth thinking about because, as this case shows, those historical agreements still have a huge impact on our legal and social landscapes even today.
So everyone listening, go out there and do some thinking. This case might be old, but it's definitely not irrelevant.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for diving in with us today.
You bet. Until next time.